Hi, today is October 22nd, 2016. This is Mobile News Podcast number 180. I'm Taro Gasawara with somebody who's typing something in my show notes trying to make me laugh, but I will refuse to do so, with John Westfall. And this week we're going
Who would mess up your show notes? Nobody would do that.
Well, it's our co-show notes, so.
Yes.
But anyway, so the big surprise to me this week wasn't that a massive DDoS attack happened. Not that I was expecting it, but
those happen fairly often.
Yeah, but I was surprised that Dyn, which used to be Dyn DNS, I think, and I'm a small customer of them, has giant customers. I thought they were all just people like me who needed to poke a little hole in our home firewall so we could, do like a home security cam or something. But
I think 18 years ago they probably were. And over the years, they've not made a lot of money off of people using their free services.
Well, I pay. They no longer have free services.
I know. I dropped off of them when they went to all pay. I use Duck DNS now, which does basically the same thing. But anyway, what I think is interesting about this is, Dyn has big customers. Dyn has such big customers that a good chunk of the internet was offline for portions of yesterday morning.
Yeah, like Twitter, for example.
And this sort of underscores why the companies that do tend to run the backbones of the internet don't offer consumer-facing services. I wonder if that had anything to do with it. Dyn was... I guess what I'm saying is I wonder if the people who targeted Dyn knew exactly how much trouble they could get.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure these people are very smart,
That's true.
This was not a bunch of script kiddies having some fun. This is a coordinated attack, right?
That's true, but I just wonder if there is any logic to not having consumer-facing services if you are hosting such big customers.
Hmm.
I think of some of the companies that do control good chunks of the actual network infrastructure. They don't sell, web hosting and, any sort of consumer-facing service. You just know about them if you run a data center and you need to hook into a backbone. So it just is interesting. I don't think, obviously, I think to have that sort of level of coordinated attack, they kind of knew a little bit about what they were targeting. But, even if you think you've got three or four big names, you might not know that you've got 10 the 12 big names like that.
Yeah, I think Netflix is one of their customers too, because they went down too, right?
Yeah, it was a lot yesterday. It was kind of crazy. I was actually offline most of the morning, and so it didn't really affect me much. I was in a meeting, but I definitely saw the emails and saw the aftermath.
Yeah, well, it was. I'm sure it was not a lot of fun for the folks who run those services yesterday. And I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens in the next couple of weeks. We're only 3 weeks away from Election Day, and it'll be interesting to see, what happens on that day if this was a practice run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see.
Okay, now speaking of streaming services and moving away scary topics like DDoS attacks. So CBS is apparently going to join something called Google's Web TV service, which will be a skinny bundle of channels, kind of like a cable TV, except not gigantic with all the stuff you don't watch. The report in Reuters said it's going to be $30 to $40 per month for a skinny bundle, which will include CBS and some other channels that U.S. people are familiar with. Would you subscribe? $30 to $40 a month is kind of expensive.
Well, it depends. I would probably have to take off some of the things that I am already paying for that would be made kind of irrelevant to it. So I might cancel Hulu, or I might cancel probably not Netflix, but maybe Hulu.
Yeah.
But even then, this is more expensive than Hulu is. So I probably would not just kind of lightly decide to do that. But I guess
and it depends who's on the skinny bundle, right?
And I've been off of cable, like live TV, for so long now that it really doesn't seem to have much of a draw for me. If I was just now considering ditching cable instead of doing it 3 years ago almost that I did it, I probably would really jump at this. But now it's almost like, you know, there's very rare times I need live TV, usually just a few sporting events here and there that I want to keep up with.
Yeah, and to be honest, the only time I watch live TV these, and actually watch it live, is when there is a hurricane or tsunami approaching. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see some live coverage to see if I need to run to the hills.
That's a good time to do it.
But aside from that, you know, I DVR a couple of things and the rest is all streaming. So, yeah.
I like seeing that these services are coming out, but I think Apple kind of has a nice idea with this whenever they release that single sign-on update for the Apple TV.
Yeah. And speaking of Netflix, so, you know, everybody has noticed over the years that the number of movies has been decreasing dramatically on Netflix, at least for those of us in the U.S., especially new movies. There are very few new movies. And new movies are movies that were released last calendar year. Let's call that new movies, to be fair. And it's been more about TV series, and even those have been dropping in and out. But apparently, if you want to watch really good movies, or let me rephrase that, maybe not good, but recent movies, the place to do it is north of the border in Canada or south of the equator in Brazil. Mm-hmm. Where they apparently have a much better selection than we do in the U.S., I assume because of licensing and other kinds of legal issues more than anything else, you know, where the content is available. But I found that both annoying and interesting.
Yeah, I wonder about Netflix. I have been a Netflix subscriber for a really long time. I still have a disc plan with Netflix.
You do? And, wow.
Yes, I do, and use it fairly regularly. But I don't necessarily like their streaming services because there are so many holes. And the stuff that I do watch on there, sometimes I do it because it's a convenience. I have the stuff downloaded somewhere else, but the Netflix app is on my tablet, and I can easily get to what I'm looking for through that versus finding it on some drive or some DVD I have it on already.
Yeah. Yeah, and it has become more of a TV series watching service than a movie service, for me at least. And of course, you know, Netflix is trying to push their own original programming. In fact, I think they said that, I don't know, some large number, like 40% of their programming will be original, you know, in the next couple of years, which kind of makes me worry because I like watching some of the older series that basically I'm old enough now that I've forgotten how they started and ended, and I don't mind watching them again.
Yeah, the place to find those anymore tends to be Hulu or Amazon.
Yeah.
Amazon has older TV series. Hulu has some older TV series that, you know, Netflix just doesn't feel like it's needing to carry. So, yeah.
Although, you know, I think I mentioned to you this to you last week or the week before. I almost subscribed to Hulu this year so my daughter could use it, you know, while she's in college and she doesn't have a TV. But then I realized it doesn't carry any of the CW shows, you know, so the shows that she really likes and I really like too, like The Arrow and The Flash and now Supergirl and so forth, are not available on Hulu. So I just didn't bother to subscribe.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It's a weird world out there. It's one that I wish, really, those solutions like Apple TV's single sign-on, and Apple TV's getting really good with at least being able to use Siri and say a name of something, and then it tells
you
where.
If you have a recent Apple TV, right? Because the older ones don't do that. Yeah.
Yeah, the newer generation. But at least it's nice to just say, you know, Hogan's Heroes, and figure out if iTunes has it, if Hulu has it, if Netflix has it.
Yeah, that's nice.
All in one place.
I no longer have a functional Apple TV. I had the second generation, you know, the first good one, the hockey puck.
Yeah, yeah.
Size thing. And it broke about a year ago. I replaced it with, I replaced it with the Amazon Fire TV stick, which broke within a year. And Amazon wouldn't replace. So I said, well, heck with that. And I bought a Roku USB stick, which works fine. So that's what's up there now in place of the Apple TV and the Amazon stick. And it's the first time I've had a bad customer experience at Amazon, and I'm a little worried about my Echo now because it's been acting a little odd, and I wonder if Amazon's customer service or own stuff is kind of gone downhill or not. But
well, after the debate this week that we've been talking about with Amazon and counterfeit parts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that we don't even have on the show rundown, but long story short, Amazon's starting to get a little bit of pressure from Apple and others on their kind of blind eye toward counterfeit parts that could potentially catch on fire and kill you. I think Amazon is getting a little bit more scrutiny than they've had in the last few years. Amazon, for a while, I think has been perceived as, oh, Amazon, they're the good guys. They're not slinging mud like Apple and Google against each other. You know, Amazon just sort of lives out here, and they've got a nice set of products that you should consider looking at. And, of course, everyone loves the Echo and all that. But Amazon has some dark underbelly as well.
Yeah. And I should note, you know, this isn't Apple-compatible cables that is being complained about. It's not like Joe's Lightning cable, you buy it and it doesn't work. These are cables that are branded as manufactured by Apple.
Yes.
And Apple is saying 90% of the products branded as manufactured by Apple are not, in fact, manufactured by them and are fakes.
Yes, which is very, very scary.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, you know, I'm going to move my microphone. Just let's see if that actually participates in our podcast this week. John, I should note that my podcasting partner, John Westfall, is kind of known for his bad Saturday jokes. And I mean grown out loud bad.
Yes.
Which he posts for his friends. So, John, just for you, here's one. Alexa, tell me a zombie joke.
Why do zombies make such great politician sound bites?
Yeah, that's a pretty bad one, Alexa. The other thing that you can do with Siri this week that people have been playing with is asking Siri what you should be for Halloween.
Mm.
And so Siri has a number of pithy responses for that sort of question.
And of course, I no longer use Siri because it's so useless to me. Okay, let me try it for that. Okay, next up is something I might try this weekend. So for the last couple of years, I have a domain that I've been paying for. I don't know what I pay. It's not a whole heck of a lot, but more than I would care to. I think it's about $150 a year. And it was hacked enough times that I simply gave up on the ISP in terms of maintaining my site. You know, not to say they're at fault, but I did their package install of Drupal. That didn't work. You know, that was hacked, even though I was keeping it up to date. I installed their package version of WordPress. It was hacked several times. And I fixed it several times, and the last time I finally gave up. And so basically, I've been paying $150 a year for email. Because I have several email addresses there that I use for, you know, registering stuff and those kind of things that are relatively important to me. Make sure I get notifications about those things. So I've been looking around for something to replace it. At first, I was thinking about Google Apps, I guess, Gmail. But it turns out you have to pay, like, I don't know, $10 a month per address. And so it'd actually be more expensive than maintaining my ISP account just for email.
Yeah, that's why when they killed the free tier of Google Apps, I registered about six or seven domains with them.
Yeah.
That I still have full domains with like 50 user accounts.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm going to ever use them for, but I'm happy I have them because they're expensive now if I wanted them.
Yeah, exactly. So earlier this week, Microsoft had kind of a soft launch. I guess they're calling it a public preview. A soft launch of Outlook.com premium service. Which for, what was it? I think it's cheap now, like you know, I don't know, I forget. A couple bucks a month. It's going to go up to $50 a year, which is still a couple bucks a month at some point. But you can have, I think, 5 email addresses attached to a custom domain name. So I'm not a real fan of Outlook.com or Outlook for that matter. But if it'll save me, you know, $70 a year, or actually more, probably maybe $100 a year, might be worth moving to. So I'm giving an Outlook.com premium service a consideration. I think in the beta period, it's like $20 a year and then goes up to $50 a year or something like that. But it's not tremendously expensive. Have you ever used I guess they're not Exchange-based. They're just Outlook-based.
So. Yeah, I've used it a little bit in the past, but I haven't used it any time lately.
Yeah. Just Outlook.com, the premium service. I guess they had a premium service, and then they shut it down, and that's the problem with Microsoft. You know, they're kind of like Google. They'll try something, then they'll shut it down. They also had a free domain name service that, you know, got lost in the shuffle somewhere.
Yep, that's true. I remember that as well.
Yeah. Okay, one more item from me, more of a rant than anything else, and that's, you know, I I recently upgraded to an iPhone 7 Plus from a 6 Plus, so a 2-year gap in phones. And I found something interesting. So 2 years ago, the annoying thing I found was that Boggle, which I think was from Electronic Arts, is no longer available from the iTunes App Store. So I think it's still sitting on my Mac somewhere, one of my older Macs. So I guess I could install it on my newer devices, but you can't download it from the store, even though you paid for it years ago, which is kind of annoying. And the second thing I just discovered this morning is I was thinking, oh, I'd like to actually have Civilization Revolution, you know, based on Sid Meier's Civilization game, which I love. It's my favorite game on the on iOS, on my iPhone 7 Plus. And I discovered it is not available for the iPhone in any shape or form, as far as I can figure. It is available for the iPad, so thank goodness for that. But it's really annoying that two games I paid for are no longer available for my iPhone.
And this is something that Electronic Arts has been doing lately that really is starting to annoy me as well, because I've had some games of theirs that I've just noticed have disappeared, and I can still download them through iOS because you can't pull it quite as easily. But, you know, I think to tell people, oh, go buy this and we'll play it over, you know, whatever, Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or whatever, and it's not available anymore, so they can't play it. So it's very frustrating.
So it's one of the problems with moving from shrink wrap to digital download. I mean, not that we never had shrink wrap for the iOS devices, but if there were something similar to that, and, you know, we would say, well, we bought it or licensed it, and even if the service is gone, in this case iTunes, you could still install it. But here I am. I can't install my favorite game on my new iPhone 7. Well, I can, but like I said, I got to go find an old Mac that boots that still has it in its iTunes library. The Mac I'm on right now doesn't. So that's my rant. Favorite games disappearing from iOS. Paid games, I should say.
It's a good rant to have. It's a frustrating rant.
Yeah, and I don't have a lot of games. In fact, I have no games on my iPhone, or maybe I downloaded one. I downloaded my second favorite iOS game just to make sure I had it here, Plants vs. Zombies.
Yeah, and I've got most of my games live on my iPad Mini. I don't use a lot of games on my iPhone, but I do have occasionally a few games that I'll put on my iPhone. It's usually games that I get really into for a few months, and then I don't really play them anymore after that. So, okay, the games that I want to continue with, those go on the iPad Mini.
Okay, now speaking of the iPhone, again, a wonderful transition from me. Wonderful segue. So you've got something for the iPhone that surprised me when you told me about it.
Yeah, so this week, I guess it was Monday, Amazon had a big sale on SanDisk Flash Media. And I picked up for about $10 off its usual price. It's usually around $80. I got it for around $70. Something called the SanDisk iExpand Flash Drive. And that's, I'm sure it has a much longer and more official name, but it's iXpand, I-X-P-A-N-D. Yeah, SanDisk iXpand Flash Drive. I bought the 128-gigabyte version. It's currently $89.99 on Amazon, although I got it for around $71, which was a pretty good price for 128 gigs of data. And I thought, because it advertises itself to have some very unique features, I thought this might be useful with my new iPhone. So the features I speak of are that on one end of it, it has a regular USB 3.0 USB-A end, so you can plug it into your computer. Mm-hmm. On the other end of it is a Lightning port.
Now that's a part that
you
intrigued
me. Plug it into your iPhone. The way that this is built on Amazon by SanDisk is that you can free up space on your iPhone by moving photos and videos to this iXpand flash drive. You then disconnect it from your phone, you plug it into your computer, and bam, you can pull those right off of there, put them wherever you want, or you can just keep them on there. You could just have a set of these and have them as your permanent backups of those photos. There's other things you can do. You can do automatic photo backup, automatic contact backup. I don't know anyone who doesn't keep their contacts in the cloud somewhere, so I really don't know why that's such a big feature. And you can load videos onto it and load files onto it that you can then access through iOS. That is, in my opinion, the biggest feature of it, because the photo backup, to be quite honest, kind of sucks.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, I actually have it running right now. It's sitting on my my desk, and I'm watching it. At least the app hasn't crashed in the time we've been podcasting. Wednesday or Thursday when I got it, the app was rebooting itself. In a couple of cases, it crashed the whole phone.
Wow.
And the phone had to reboot itself. And now I turned off the auto backup, and I just did a manual backup. And it's trying to do a manual backup of 5,305 files, so 5,305. And it's kind of creeping along. It goes really fast, and now it's at backing up 229 of 5,305. And I think it's probably checking to see if the files are on there. What I'm assuming is happening and why this is running so slow is a little bit not SanDisk's fault, but a little bit of Apple's fault. Apple stores on your phone not the full high-res version of each photo. It stores those in the cloud. And so I'm assuming that for some of these, it's trying to download the high res. But I have no idea if then it'll even do a bulk delete. I haven't been able to get to the point where I could trust it doing a bulk delete. So that is kind of where I'm at. And I know all of these are backed up in other places. I back up primarily through Dropbox. So I could try doing its delete feature and see how that works. The app, other than being very slow to back up photos and crashy, when you're not doing the backup files, the app works pretty well, and it does let you copy files, copy photos from the phone, copy files from the iXpand drive to the phone. So if you've got, you know, any sort of file type that you've got something on your phone that it can open, so photos, or I assume if you put PDFs or anything on there, you can open them up. And if you are trying to send files, you could probably do that. There is a way to open a file. You kind of get the standard share sheet in iOS. So if someone says to you, hey, can you send me that presentation that you just showed? Well, you could pull the drive out of your computer, plug it into your phone, and attach it to email.
Right. So two questions. One, you said the backup is slow, but is copying any faster if you just want to copy some files?
I actually haven't done too much with the copying. I've been trying to get the photos to back up, but I did just get it a couple days ago. But once it actually has files to back up, it seems to do that pretty fast over Lightning.
And the second question is, can you copy your application installation files from the Mac? And by that, I mean iOS apps, of course. So can you go into the iTunes folder on your Mac, copy the installation files, and then install the file from there? I mean, install an app from there? Probably not.
That would be really interesting, and that's a really good question. I don't think you can, but now I am intrigued. I don't know what iOS sees those, I guess they're IPK files or whatever they are. I wonder what it does. Waited a minute here, I might be able to, the IPA files.
Right. So, in the old days when we were Windows Mobile enthusiasts, and I am now turning towards Redmond and spitting at them, when we were Windows Mobile enthusiasts, and when PDAs and phones were good and had external, cards it could accept, you might recall that you and I, a lot of our friends, used to store our app installation files on a CF card somewhere, and since we had to frequently, hard reset.
Yeah, hard reset and rebuild.
Phone. That was really handy to have it right in the card so you don't have to attach it to PC and try to use ActiveSync, or ActiveStink as we used to call it, to try to reinstall apps.
Oh, yeah. ActiveSync was one of the more annoying things out there. Yeah, so I'm seeing. I just put an IPA file on there. See what options I get on the share sheet. And unfortunately, install app or something like that is not on there. So
okay.
Well, that will not work. But I could add it to my iCloud drive or save it to Dropbox. So that's the other nice thing about this is if you use one of these particular services for file sharing or you in fact, I even have Transmit, which is a SFTP, SSH, and FTP client on my phone.
Right.
That means I could conceivably grab a presentation, upload it to someone's web server, or do a lot of heavy lifting work that iOS is not particularly known for. So that's kind of cool. I do like it for that. And that's honestly one of the reasons I bought it for, was in that Edge scenario where one day someone says, hey, can you send me this file or can you move this file from your device to my device? And they've got something like a Surface tablet and I've got my iOS devices or vice versa, that it provides that sort of bridge.
Right. Old school sneaker net.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which USB has its place. Which has its place in the world. Okay, well, we had another, not newsless week, but didn't have news we were interested in, I think.
It's getting harder and harder to please us, Todd.
I know.
We're just...
And your birds, too.
Yeah, well, they're always hard to please.
Yeah.
They just made a perfect landing back where they needed to go, so that's good.
But next week, we should have a friend or two joining us on our little panel. And we will have two sets of announcements to talk about. Microsoft is making, has some kind of hardware announcement event. What is it, Monday or Tuesday of this coming week? And Apple is like 2 days after that, Wednesday or Thursday, whichever day that is. So we're hoping to hear about maybe a Surface Pro 5. Maybe, I don't know what actually, what Microsoft might announce. They might announce that they're going to adopt Android. No, I don't think so. Android Surface phone, there we go. And then Apple, I don't know what they're going to announce. Some people are speculating new MacBook Pros, that the MacBook Air is dead, and some kind of new MacBook follow-up will be there, but hopefully cheaper. Nobody said anything about a new iPad, so I'm not expecting that. I'm kind of hoping they'll announce a new Mac Mini, although I doubt it. I think that's also another deadline right now.
I'm kind of hoping they finally announce when I'll get my AirPods, as I complained about last week. I'm looking at the website right now, and the little button on the website says available late October.
Well, it's
apparently the 22nd is not late enough.
No, it's not late. It's kind of like middle October. It's not late at all. Okay, so I think Microsoft has an event on Monday the 24th, and Apple has something on Thursday the 27th. So
I hope we have something to talk about.
So hopefully we'll have...
If we don't have anything after those two events, then it might be time to just pack it up on mobile technology.
Well, you know, we as you might recall, we dedicated a whole show to the Google announcement. And although we dedicated a whole show, at the end, the four of us who are on there at the time, yourself, me, let's see, Frank McPherson and Don Sorcinelli, none of us were buying anything.
But I think we sort of annoyed Google with that. I think the Google gods were probably not happy with us when they heard that we weren't all that keen on what they were peddling. Yeah. But at least I did get a cool little toy. This SanDisk USB drive will be my go-to USB drive that I keep in my bag. So.
Yeah. Although it sounds like the app could use a little bit of tweaking there.
Well, I've never really trusted SanDisk for apps. Okay. I mean, I don't think they've ever produced an app that is good quality. So but their hardware seems to be pretty good. I haven't had, in terms of drives that have died on me, I think maybe SanDisk has one of the better reliability records for me. Most of my flash drives are SanDisk drives.
Okay. And what did you say I should be asking Siri now before I forget? You said Siri.
What you should be for Halloween.
Oh, okay. So let me ask Siri. Siri, what should I be for Halloween?
Some cardboard and a brown t-shirt, and you're a s'more. S'more or less?
Oh, that's like a bad joke Saturday thing.
Yeah. Mine, when I asked Siri just now, it said jump up and down over and over and shake your fist. You can tell people you're anti-gravity.
Oh my gosh. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Okay.
Told ya.
It is
not exactly the best of jokes, but I think on a cringeworthy contest, Alexa and Siri are pretty well timed.
They're well matched. We can only wonder if Google does anything. Perhaps we should test that. But in any case, that brings a relatively short, not too short, Mobile Views podcast number 180 to end, 181. All things being equal and going well, we should have a guest next week, and we'll be talking about both the Apple announcement and the Microsoft announcement. So we will see. Okay, John, thanks for the podcast, and we'll talk to you later.